Welcome to another Liverpool Way podcast. My name's Dave Usher, editor of liverpoolway.co.uk. We're recording this a couple of hours after the Chelsea game, and joining me tonight is Paul Natton and Stu Montague. So, frustrating afternoon at Anfield today. Let's just get straight into it. So, Paul, what did you make of it?
Yeah, I agree with you, Dave. It was frustrating, although I was also very mindful, even right on the final whistle, that it was still a good point for us. Because they're really good. They're a really, really, really good side. I mean, you can see Tuchel's impact very, very clearly. They're very well drilled. I mean, clearly, they've got a superb squad. I mean, they've got quality. They've probably got two quality players for every position.
The bench was ridiculous, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, you know, you look at it and you think we had a whole half a game against 10 men. But they were just so well drilled. I think if we were going to be able to do anything against them second half, we needed to move the ball a little bit quicker. And I still think there's probably a... I don't think we should use today as a benchmark for squad deficiencies. Because I had Merseyside on the way home from the match, and there was a few people on there saying, oh, we need this, we need that. We're not going to win the league because we haven't got enough up front. I think using today as a benchmark for the quality of the squad is doing a disservice to Chelsea, really, because they're absolutely superb. But having said that, I still do think we need something a little bit different, and we do still need more goals. But overall, good point. First half, I felt we were the better side, played really well. Second half, in some senses, they managed to control the game without the ball. So yeah, all in all, I suppose a point is fair.
Stu, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting game because the red card obviously affects everything that you everything after that. It affects your perceptions of what a good result or a bad result is on the day. I thought in the first half it was a pretty even game. It was a bit of a coin toss. We were the better team for the first half of the first half. They looked dangerous for the second half of it. And then probably the same in the second half as well, where I thought decent for 20 minutes, 25 minutes, and then just ran out of ideas a little bit. They are probably the worst side in the league to come up against in that situation with a red card, I think. I can't imagine. No, I don't think there's another team in the league that are better prepared. They've got the personnel, haven't they? I rate Christiansen, I rate Rudiger. They're both the good centre-halves. Aspilicueta's irritating today, but he knows what he's doing. He's an old pro. Yeah, they're probably the worst team you can come up against where if they just decide they're going to dig in and a point will do them. But frustrated because once you get the red card, you want the 3 points. And it's frustrating not to get them. Whereas at half-time I was okay with a point because I thought this is a pretty even game and we could lose it. Second half, you don't think you're going to lose the game really, apart from a couple of counter-attacks, which, you know. But, yeah. We should have done more. We should. It's frustrating. It's an opportunity missed. It's not the end of the world, but it's an opportunity missed, isn't it, against a good side and a rival.
Yeah. You say Chelsea the best team in the league in that situation, and I'd agree with that. I mean, if you compare what Chelsea did when they go down to 10 men, you compare that with the likes of Arsenal, and it's night and day. You know, Chelsea's resilient. They're organised, and I just felt when I was watching it, I thought if Frank Lampard was still in charge here, we'd win this easily.
Yeah.
But you can just see the organisation with them, and you know everyone knows what they're doing. Like, they dig in, they all do the jobs. They weren't overcommitting forward. They knew, like, okay, if we get a chance to break, we'll take it. But let's not go mad here. Everyone just stay in their positions, and they just made it really hard for us. But I don't think we did enough at all in attack. I thought, like I said in the build up in the preview show, I always feel like if our front three play well, then we'll beat anyone. And I just felt like the front three, not all of them, I mean, I thought Mo was okay. I thought Sadio was terrible. And obviously Bobby's gone off, Jota comes on, so there's a little bit of disruption here. I thought Jota played well, but Sadio was so bad today. And that's my point, is like, if the front three play well, we'll win. If they don't, then it becomes a little bit more of a lottery, really, because I feel as though the rest of the team always performs to more or less the same standard, and it just comes down to whether we're taking our chances. And today I didn't think we created enough. The ones that we did create, shots maybe a little bit too close to the keeper, but it was just hard because they defended really well. We weren't quite at it, and a draw was just, it was more than a fair result, I thought. We couldn't really say we were hard done by and we deserved to win, because we didn't. Chelsea were well worth a point, and it's a decent point, but because we're playing against 10 men at half time, I was convinced we'd win it, so it's disappointing that we didn't. But overall, if you think a draw against Chelsea, as long as you're beating the teams you're supposed to beat, then you can have the occasional draw against the top side, and it's not going to do you too much damage. But it's a much better point for Chelsea than it is for us. But what did we make of the penalty and the sending off? Paul, start with you.
I mean, obviously it's down at the Anfield Road end, so couldn't see any of it at the time. But I've since seen it. I got back home and watched it as soon as I got in. And well, yeah, I mean, it follows the letter of the law, doesn't it? I mean, maybe the law is a little bit unfair, because it is that whole sort of double penalty. They're penalised twice for the same thing, but there was movement of his arm towards the ball. It did stop a clear goal scoring opportunity, and the law says that it should be a penalty and it should be a red card. So that's that, really. I don't think it's really up for debate. I think the laws are clear, and what the law describes is exactly what happened. So if it was us, I think I'd feel a little bit ripped off, but I don't think there was anything unfair about it. I thought their response and our response to that was interesting. So they basically went nuts and did everything they could to try and put Mo off. I think Mo must have, I felt like about 20 minutes he was waiting to take the penalty. It obviously wasn't that long. But Rudiger stomps up and starts rubbing away at the penalty spot with his boots. There must have been four or five Chelsea players between Mo and the goal for the entirety of the time he was waiting. Loads of moaning from them. And when Mo eventually took it was absolutely clinical. I mean, he's a superb penalty taker these days, I think. And we went absolutely nuts as well. I tell you what, the noise in the cop after that goal went in. Honestly, my ears were still ringing at half time. I wasn't at the original. I wasn't at the original Liverpool Chelsea ghost goal semi final where everyone talks about the atmosphere there. I wasn't at that one, but I was at Dortmund. I was at Barcelona, and they were very, very loud games. And I mean, maybe it's just because we've been away so long, but I was shocked how loud it was. My ears were still ringing halfway through half time from how loud it was when that goal went in. It was fantastic. It was a brilliant feeling, absolutely superb. And like you, Dave, you were saying before, you felt we'd go on and win it. I certainly did at that stage. So, yeah, I thought it was absolutely fair. I thought the decisions were right. There's a little bit of controversy, I believe, about the fact that Taylor was called over to look at the monitor. He only looked at a still image rather than the moving one. But, I mean, who cares? It's the right decision. So
I heard that on the radio on the way home, but I've just seen just a clip of it on Twitter, and he wasn't looking at a still image. He was looking at a slow motion, but he seen it. You know, he seen, like, the ball hitting like the thigh and then moving up onto the arm. So he did see it. I think what's probably happened, I think he was probably told it's pretty much a definite penalty, but go and look at it and see if you think it's a red card or not. Mm-hmm. That was my take on it, but I don't know. Stu, what did you think?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't even controversial. I'm not watching it in the ground, I'm watching it on TV. So for me, when I've seen it, the first replay, my immediate thought is, I hope that there isn't something else in the build-up. You know, I hope someone hasn't fouled someone before that and they can pull it back. That was my only doubt. It's clear. He does a little scoop with his arm. You know, he's worried that it might still go in off his arm, so he does a little scoop. It's a totally natural reaction to do that when you're on the line, but it's a red, you know. I think maybe they've asked Taylor to go over and have a look at it. Again, it's clear. I don't even think he's got any leeway. I think if it's a deliberate handball, which it clearly is, like it has to be deliberate to be handball.
They had it on Sky before, Stu. They actually had the law up on Sky when I was watching it, when I got back from the game. And it actually doesn't even mention the word deliberate. It's just the clear goal-scoring opportunity. If you stop what's a clear goal, then it's a red via handball, then it's a red card. I thought, like you, I thought it was about being deliberate. The laws, well, the law that Sky put on the telly before didn't use the word deliberate. It's just if a handball stops a clear scoring opportunity, then it's a red card.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that for it to be handball in the first place, in theory, it has to be deliberate. You have to have deliberately made yourself bigger. Or, you know, the intention of the handball rule is that the actions that you take into handball that are deliberate in the first place, and it wasn't. It didn't just ping up and hit you by accident. But
yeah.
I think they're obviously going to go mad about it because they just need to. I would expect Liverpool to do the same thing. You just cause as much of a furore as you possibly can. You know, you put as much doubt as you possibly can in the officials' minds, and they've got it wrong. They might give you one back in the second half or something. So they're going to do that. I was just a bit annoyed. For me, Taylor's got to take a bit more control, and you can't be having people chasing you around for 5 minutes. It was embarrassing.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, because it all happens so fast for me, and you're looking at different things. So we're not seeing it on the TV. What was going on? Well, like somebody had said that the Chelsea players were stopping him from taking the card out of his pocket and all sorts, you know, when they were trying to put Mo off, and somebody got booked. I don't know who that was. I didn't really see. I just seen he brandished the yellow card at somebody. I don't know what they'd done or why one player got booked and others didn't, when it just looked like there was about six or seven of them, like, as Paul said, just between Mo and the ball when he's wanting to take the penalty. But yeah, what was happening with all that, and what was the goalkeeper doing? Why didn't the keeper get booked? Because it looked like he was the one who was delaying it. He got booked afterwards. The keeper got booked for tripping Hendo up. He didn't get booked for what was going
before. That's right. Rudiger got booked in the build-up. Yeah, I thought Taylor, generally speaking, had a poor game in the context of what we're told is the let it flow interpretation of the laws this season. I mean, I certainly felt, I said to the lads next to me, in the first 10 minutes, he must have stopped the game more times than Mike Dean did in the whole 90 minutes the week before. I just think he's a fussy, busy referee. And like you said there, Dave, just doesn't have control. I think he tries to assert himself through stoppages rather than through force of personality. And I just thought he was generally really, really poor, although to be fair, he did make the right decision over the penalty. In terms of the yellow cards, you saw it live at the time. Stu, what did you think? Was it there should have been more, I thought.
For me, it's just, it's a level, you need to get a level of control. You can't have Azpilicueta, Rudiger, Jorginho, you can't have them for 5 minutes in your face arguing. So, you know, I think for me, I remember an incident years ago, I think it was Damian Tomasi for Roma against us. And I just remember the ref just holding onto the yellow card in the top of his pocket and just looking at him. And he ended up sending him off in the end, just going, if you carry on talking, it's a yellow. And he gave him a chance, then he pulled the yellow out. And then he went, and if you carry on talking, it's another yellow. And Tomasi didn't leave, and he just gave him another yellow. And I just feel like at times, it's like, you need to just draw a line under it and go, all right, lads, we've been having this chat now for 5 minutes. Just go away. But he didn't. I didn't think in match play that he was too poor today, Taylor. I think he was okay. I think you get an element sometimes with 11v10 where they feel a bit sorry for the 10. So there's moments there where the ball hasn't gone out for 10 minutes and Chelsea are being run ragged, and then someone gives Jorginho a little chance to go over, a little bit of a clip. Is it a foul? Who knows? Jorginho goes over, and I do think it's just human nature for some officials to go, right, OK, well, we'll give that. They've been getting run ragged for 10 minutes. We'll give them that because, all right, they're down to 10. We've got to be fair. And I think there was a little bit of that in some of the decisions he gave today.
I'd say there's a bit of that, certainly. As you say, that's human nature. The issue that I had with it, I felt in the first half, he was refereeing it the way we've seen games refereed this season, where there was, I can think of five or six where, for both sides, they wanted a free kick. Players are appealing for a free kick. If the crowd's expecting a free kick, and he's gone, no, get on with it. Like, there was a couple of them that were blatant fouls and he should have blew up. But I can live with that. If that's how it's going to be, I'm all for that. Like I've said it before, you know, I like this change. I think it's going to make games better. The problem that I've got is in the second half, he completely abandoned that, or at least he did in terms of when Chelsea players were going down. And I'm convinced he's because he sent a Chelsea player off whether he's looked at it at half time and maybe he's felt it was harsh or he had no choice but to do it, but he felt bad because it you know, he doesn't think Reece James was deliberately doing it. Whether that's it, I don't know, but he just completely changed the way he was refereeing the game. He started, like, he was giving them free kicks for nothing. Things that he was waving away in the first half, all of a sudden, they were Chelsea free kicks. And the linesman on the main stand side, there was two incidents in that second half. I totally lost the plot. I was like screaming my head off at him. It was when Trent got tripped up right in front of him. Now, that wasn't one of those where two players have like come together shoulder to shoulder and one's just stronger and they've gone, no, get on with it. He just tripped him up right in front of the linesman and the linesman let it go and he had to have seen it and he knew it was a free kick and he let that go. So I was fuming about that. And then a few minutes later, Alonso falls on the ball. Like, Elliot nutmegs him and is trying to go past him. And Alonso, like, falls on the ball. And Elliot's trying to, like, get the ball out from under him. And Alonso's already fell over and he's trying to get up. And Elliot's obviously got, like, a hand on him because he's in front of him. And Elias flags and, like, and he gives a free kick. I'm like, hang on a minute. How are you giving a free kick for that when you've just allowed Trent to get tripped up? And it was things like that. I thought, no, these are just trying to make it up because Chelsea got a man sent off. So now it's just favourable for them. And I'm not saying that that's why we didn't win the game, but I think both things can be true. Taylor and that the main stand linesman were abysmal in the second half, but we didn't really do enough to win the game. You know, we didn't think our attack and play was good enough. But it was just so frustrating that, like, every time we're trying to build up a head of steam, a Chelsea player was just going down and they were getting a free kick. I'm like, that's not how it's supposed to be this season. And it wasn't how it was in the first half, but he just completely changed his approach after half time. And I do think, is that because he's watched the video of what's happened and he's thought, I probably had no choice but to send him off, but, you know, it's a bit harsh, the lad's not meant it, because he's just gone out and just done Chelsea favours in the second half.
I think with the Alonso one, the thing that annoys me is that fouls like that they were getting a few of them, is you have seen football before, haven't you guys? You know that when someone's just running into a corner, they are going to just wait for someone to touch them and fall over. Like, you're a professional referee. You know that happens. Could you not keep an eye out for it instead of just constantly falling for it? That's what annoys me in those sort of situations, is that you need to have a little bit... I mean, I suppose they'd just say... Well, the law is the law, and he's clipped him, and he's got every right to go down. But hopefully we'll get away from that a little bit more this year. I think this, again, you can have the ones where if they're in the centre of midfield, they'll let it flow. If it's you know, if Harvey Elliott's about to run into the area, if they don't give that against him, it becomes a little bit more controversial. So they just naturally, they give those ones where it's like, well, this might turn into a goal. If they don't give it, it might be a goal. Whereas in midfield, you can go, well, there's, you know, there's plenty of play to carry on before anyone scores. So we'll let that one flow. But I mean, you always get frustrated in games like that, though, don't you? It's when teams are, the backs to the wall, they're trying to run down a bit of time, they're playing all the, you know, all the gamesmanship comes out. It's just naturally frustrating. You think about how it was in the last 25 minutes compared to how you felt in the first 20 minutes of the second half, and it felt like we were building up a real head of steam. They didn't have chance to fall over, they didn't have chance to get any fouls. It did feel at that point it was just a matter of time. It was Liverpool were really doing the things that you need to do to win that sort of game.
I agree with that to a point, Stu. I do agree with that to a point, but the thing that I found frustrating, you were right, we were doing nearly all the things you'd want us to do, retaining the ball, moving it around, moving it from side to side. I thought the tempo, I mean, could have been a little bit quicker, but we weren't really working the keeper. I think we had, did Robbo hit one? But there wasn't much happening in the second half. And I suppose that's my real frustration. I mean, in terms of Chelsea time wasting, I totally get it. I get why they were doing that. Yeah, it is frustrating to watch. You're absolutely right. But I don't blame them for doing it. I would probably want us to do the same if we're in that situation. But my real frustration really was just the inability to actually create situations where we've got a good chance of scoring. I didn't really feel that we were particularly threatening. But then that brings me back around to where I started in terms of, you know, does that mean that we're absolutely lacking something? We've got a fundamental issue in the squad, and I don't think we have. I think when you're talking about a game like this, this is not the benchmark for the squad. This is a really, really good side in very exceptional circumstances, and they were difficult to break down. So that was my frustration, really. I don't know whether you agree or disagree. I just didn't think there were quite enough chances there in that second half. That was my. But I think all the other bits, fine. Yeah, we were doing what you'd want us to do, just not really the end product.
For me, the say like 45 to 65, maybe it felt like we were putting in all the hard work, all the groundwork that in theory should pay dividends in the last 20 or whatever. It felt like, for me.
Do you mean just in terms of tiring them out and moving them around?
They felt like they were just clinging on at that point. They were really being stretched. It was like they were really being pushed at that point to just hold on and stay in the game. And you think, okay, I can live with this because this can't go on for much longer without really good chances coming in. Not just, you know, Fabinho shot from range, Van Dijk shot from range. Robbo had a shot from range, but it just felt like, for me anyway, it felt like they were being stretched and they're being strained, and there's nowhere on earth they could carry on at that level of intensity. I was like, they can't carry on like this for much longer without conceding. And then it just felt like it hit a wall, maybe about 65-70, and then they suddenly just took a breath and they were like, yeah, we're comfortable now. Liverpool's intensity dropped and Chelsea just felt a lot more comfortable, and you felt like it was far less inevitable that there was a goal going to come.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It fizzled out and it never felt like we were going to score. For me, the only way I was thinking we might score is just because we've just got a history of scoring late goals, and I thought, yeah, it'll feel like footy's back when there's like a late goal in front of the cop, you know, just to break the opposition's heart. And I thought that would be typical of us to do that. But it never really looked like we were going to do it. You know, we weren't creating much. I thought the big disappointment today was just our left-hand side. I just thought we got nothing from that side. Robbo was rusty.
Sadio, and that's fair enough, isn't it?
Sadio couldn't do a thing right, though. The second half especially, Sadio just... No, maybe
frustration for me.
Maybe I'm being harsh, but it was just how it felt at the time. I was watching it and I thought, has he actually done anything right in this half? It was like everything was going wrong. But we just... You thought if we're going to do something, it's going to come from a set piece or something down the right-hand side, like a little triangle with like Trent, Harvey and Mo. Maybe one of them will do something. But the left-hand side just wasn't really giving us anything. And coming on to that a little bit more, I want to talk about the fact that Harvey started the game, which I think will have surprised most of us. But before we get to Harvey himself, just a point that I think was something that I noticed. I don't think Hendo's as effective.
Agreed.
On the left, as he is on the right hand side. I'm not saying Hendo like had a bad game or anything. I just felt like he looked like a little bit uncomfortable over there. You know, the understanding that he's got with Trent on that side. You take that away by putting him there, and I understand why you have Harvey on the right hand side, because he's looked like dynamite alongside Trent and Mo. It just looks like really, really encouraging. But moving Hendo to that other side, it's like, you know, Milner will play there, and it's natural for him. You know, he's got that understanding with Robbo and Sadio. Hendo being there just didn't quite work for me, but that's not to say it can't in the future. I think it's the first time he's really played on that side. But yeah, that was just something that I felt didn't really work for us. But yeah, Harvey, what did you think?
Well, absolutely fascinating, first of all, that he picked him. I mean, I did talk very briefly about it after the Burnley pod, but I don't think any of us thought he would do it. I just felt it's something that it would be a complete shock if he did it, because Klopp does like to back young players, but I think all of us felt he'd go for a more senior player. So, again, huge statement about how he regards him. Again, that he left him on. He never got hooked again. He played the full 90-95 minutes.
That was interesting. Hendo came off and Harvey. I don't think any of us saw that coming.
Well, I think he said in his interview on Sky, which I just caught just before we started the pod, he said on there that it was simply about fitness. Harvey had played all the way through pre-season and Hendo hadn't, Robbo hadn't, so he was making it about legs. But the fact that he also, another sort of indication of how highly he thinks of Harvey is that he moves his captain from the right to the left. I mean, I think... Just on that point before I come back to Harvey, I think Robbo was very circumspect in the first half. Barely got out of his own half. He kind of would hover around the halfway line. Hendo was getting drawn inside. And Sadio just does that thing where he just some of the positions he takes up just look a bit mad to me sometimes. When you really want a bit of width, or you want him to pull out wide a little bit so we can start to stretch them, he was tucking in too much.
Yeah,
but the intricacies of Klopp's system are such that I think it's quite hard to criticise that, really, as in the context of what we've just said about Hendo not being used to playing in that position. Coming back to the other side, I felt in the first half, the thing that I'd noticed last week, which I mentioned in the Burnley pod, where Trent, that combination of those three on that side is allowing Trent to get into those, now and again, those sort of inside forward De Bruyne positions from right back. So still able to deliver what he delivers from right back, but also come a little bit inside occasionally. And obviously that's how he set up Sadio's goal last week. He also he had a shot himself from there and tried another one to Sadio, another little pass to Sadio from that similar position. And I thought first off, there was a couple of interesting moments where that was happening. The interchanges between the three of them were there again. But I felt as soon as we dropped a man and we were playing against 10 men, that just faded a little bit because we weren't drawing them out very far. They were just staying really compact. In terms of Harvey himself, I mean, I just think, I'm not sure if I saw anything any more impressive than we saw last week, other than the level of opposition it was against. I mean, it just seems already that he's completely accepted by all the senior players. Which is fascinating, really, when you think about his age and lack of experience. The vision is really, really clear. The technique is really, really clear. He thinks differently to a lot of other players. He tries tricky little balls at sort of counterintuitive angles, which can work. Some little openings occasionally. Starting to develop a link up with Mo and Trent that we talked about last week. He's just incredibly impressive. And I think, it absolutely nails the idea that we need to be bringing somebody into midfield, because the last thing we should be doing is impeding his development. And also, don't want to forget about Kurt as well, because he's going to have a big role to play this season. But I think he's absolutely sensational. He could be. The only question mark I have about him now is just how high his ceiling is. He's 18. It's mad to think that he's 18, playing like that in a game like that. With that level of pressure, that level of responsibility, and just seems totally at ease.
Yeah, I think it's like you're saying there, Paul. It's amazing to watch. I think if I'm Curtis Jones, if I'm Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, I'm worried. I've definitely got a bit of a concern that there is a threat now there for my position, and there's someone there who can reasonably take a lot of minutes off my plate. I just thought his quality on the ball was—it's just so comfortable. It's just—he's never—he's not hurried. Doesn't look like he's got any problems with his confidence in and around World Cup winners and Champions League winners.
Yeah.
And he does these lovely little bits of improvisation and makes them look simple, makes them look like they're the most common sense thing in the world. Little chips over people's heads and little dinks and. Doesn't look flashy, just looks like, well, that was the most sensible thing to do at the time. Yeah, I was hugely impressed with him, and I think it's a big statement. No matter what Klopp says about minutes in legs, I think he kept Harvey Elliott on because Harvey Elliott was quite likely to create a goal, and that's where he's at now, where you don't want to take him off because you think he's got that little bit of magic where he might create something in that little network over on the right-hand side. Although, again, though, in the second half, it frustrated me because it just felt like the three of them, everything's coming inside against you. You want the width, and it just felt like, you know, Salah wants to come inside, Elliot wants to come inside and play, Trent wants to come inside that right-hand side half space and play there. And, yeah, it was a bit frustrating. Obviously, you know, I trust the coaching staff to know more about the patterns of play they want than I do. But I just wonder against 10 men, against a deep block like that, whether getting the fullbacks around the outside is better, or, you know, trying to get that width. It just felt like everything was funneling into the centre. And as creative as they are, it felt like it was making Chelsea's life a little bit easier than it should have been.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think, I suppose, and as you say, I'm reflecting on the game, and I think I probably agree on reflection. But I think for me, similar points, but on the other side, was more glaring. You know, I thought that Costa should have come on sooner for Robbo. same reason that you just outlined there, Stu. Really, we needed that width, and we saw from Costas last week that he's really, really good at getting down to the byline and whipping the ball over accurately and with pace. And I just think we needed that a little bit earlier, particularly as Robbo, as I said earlier, just seemed a little bit more circumspect. But I think you're right, it was those deficiencies were there on the right as well as on the left. I just think it was more glaring on the left.
It's difficult because I think whichever way you look at it, you can say we need to start throwing, we need to put good crosses into the box. And then you look at the Chelsea defenders and think, they're fine with that. And then you can look at it and go, well, we need to try and play these tricky little intricate passes to try and open them up. And again, it's difficult because you've got a really good block of eight players there. We definitely could have done more. We definitely should have done more. But sometimes I think it's easy to underestimate how difficult it is to break down eight very, very good footballers if they just decide to sit in a block.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, it's slightly unfair because Bobby's come off injured, so your bench option up front is Jota, and he's already on. But you weren't looking at the bench thinking, okay, Sadio's not on it today, let's get Sadio off and bring Minamino on, or, Ox. I don't even know who the other subs were. I don't think Origi was on the bench, but even if he was, you're not going to put him on. And this is something we've spoke about. We desperately need to buy another forward, but I would like one. I would like Origi moved on and somebody who can actually contribute to come in his place, because I think that's a problem for us. And especially now, we don't know whether Bobby's hamstring is going to keep him out for a couple of weeks. And then obviously you've got the African Nations in January where we're going to lose two of the four forwards. We do need somebody else in an ideal world. And do we think that was an issue today when you're looking at the bench and thinking we can't really change it because Jota's already on? Is that an issue, do you think?
I mean, the lad next to me was saying, we were just talking really about 20 minutes to go, just saying, on one level, you think you want a different type of player to come on, maybe an Ox driving from midfield, or possibly even a Keita. Just to give something different, just somebody who can break the lines a little bit, but with a little surge forward. But I'm mindful of what I said a couple of times in the pod so far, is that we shouldn't be using that second half against that team as the benchmark for what the squad needs. But then the flip side to that coin is that, as Klopp continually says, how do you improve a team this good? You need somebody really special. And how do you have a game changer in a match against opponents that tough? You need somebody really special. And I just don't know whether that player is out there, and if they are, whether they're affordable or not. I think the one thing that we lack is somebody really, really clinical with that bit of magic about them. So the best way to exemplify it is to give you a name. If you could put peak Luis Suarez into this team, that's the difference maker on a day like today. But, getting a player like that, first of all, I don't know who that player is out there at the moment, who we could actually get now. And second of all, I'm still not absolutely convinced that we've got the sort of money it would take to get him. I think, again, listening to the radio on the way home, and there was a lad on there making similar points to the one I've just been saying there, that we need a difference maker. But then ranting and raving about the money and we need to be spending this, we need to be spending that, with absolutely no concept of what the club's finances are or what's possible. As though it's just, there's just this limitless pot that you dip into and you just go and get who you want. He was making that comment in the context of the other business that's been done around the league or around Europe, the big clubs, the oil clubs in the last week or so. But I do think that's the level of talent we're talking about. I'm just not sure whether that's the level of talent we're able to get. But just to say, final time, I know I'm repeating myself now, but I think it just is important to state that I don't think it's a failing to see a gap in the squad like that at this level against an opponent that good in those particular circumstances that we had today.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from, Dave, when you're saying you want someone, you just want someone on the bench, don't you, that you can look at and think, I wouldn't mind seeing them come on and see if they can do something. And for me, I think it's unrealistic to think that you can have the big four on big four wages, and then we're going to bring in another guy who's like this amazing change maker, and we've got five very well paid players at the top of the team. But I would, whatever Divock's on, if we could move him on, whatever, some young lad, some prospect I don't know about, some kid from Sassuolo or Atalanta or someone who we bring in for 15 million who's on 60 grand a year or 60 grand a week or something. Just someone that you're like, I'd be quite excited. Go on then, let's have a look, let's have something different, because I think we're all got into that position now where you look at Divock and you just sigh, you're like, well, we're not going to get anything, there's just no point doing that move, we're not going to get anything from him. I don't think today's a good example for when you would put someone on. I think a lot, you'd probably disagree with me, I think we might have had this chat in the past, but for me with Sadio, I'll keep him on in games like that anyway, just because even when it's bouncing off his shin, even when he can't control the ball all day, he sometimes just does things that get you a goal. He'll get to a ball before someone and win you a penalty. Even in this match, the reason why we get the penalty is because Mane is on his toes when no one else is, and he gets the penalty. And he isn't playing that well, but he's just got that little bit of sharpness, that little bit of street fighter in him, where he sometimes just dig things out. So I don't even know if I'd be... There are many players that I would hook him for in that sort of game, because I just think, well, it'll just drop in the box and he might be the quickest to it, even when he's playing poorly. But I agree with Paul as well about, you know, the criticism on the money side of things. I just think you can't set the bar with some of the other clubs that we're competing with at the moment. If we're run as a viable business, then we're run as a viable business. And if there's no money there during a pandemic, then there's no money there. I think the club's been run as well as you could possibly expect for 4 or 5 years now. But I do understand the idea of, like, can we have another option up top? But if Origi doesn't want to go anywhere and we don't get a good offer for him, then there's virtually no chance that the owners are going to have an extra player on the books when they can't get rid of the one they've got.
No, that's right. I agree that if Origi doesn't go, there's no chance of bringing somebody in, because you're basically paying Origi to do absolutely nothing. Because he's just not—he's not a factor. He's not featured, and you know he's not going to play. Ideally, I want. I agree with what you said about wanting a younger player. The problem is we've got Cade Gordon now. If he was maybe a year down the line, this isn't a problem, because you'd like to think that he could be on the bench, and maybe in a few months' time he will be. I do think he's fairly close, but it's probably just a bit too soon because he's only 16. But maybe they're not going to sign somebody because they don't want to put anybody in his way, as we've seen with Harvey. There's 2 years difference, or there's at least a year between Cade Gordon and Harvey. But I do think it's a similar predicament, where if you sign somebody now, it just means you've got the established four plus a fifth coming in. Where does like a promising young player get any minutes? And I think we're just a little bit of an unfortunate position that he's maybe not quite ready yet, but he's fairly close, and we're at that in-between stage with it. But I think it's going to be interesting in a few months' time whether Cade Gordon's actually getting on the bench or not. I think he might be, but, you know, time will tell, I suppose.
I think the one thing that we might hold out a little bit of hope for is that there's some sort of... we're the cleverest guys in the room diddle that they can just see, you know, if there's a club in trouble or there's a fire sale going on, you know, maybe that's the opportunity they jump in and go, we can pick up this asset for not a lot of money, because, you know, that's the type of guys they are, that's how they made all their money, is if they could spot something in the market where they go, actually, this is really undervalued, we grab it and we own that value, maybe that's the one way we get ourselves something a little bit exciting that we weren't expecting.
That could happen. There's still time for that, I suppose. But it comes back to Origi, though, doesn't it? If he doesn't go, then you just can't see anything happening. I mean, Shaqiri's gone, so that has freed up a place for an overseas player now. But I think as long as Origi's here picking up his salary, I don't think they'll bring anybody else in.
I also think those sorts of play, I think Stu's absolutely spot on. That is how they work, and I think there's a lot of sense in working that way, particularly at the moment. But I also think that those sorts of players, when they get them, tend to be players that don't really make much of an impact but they do end up selling them on. Or they come in and they do a bit of a bit part job and then they move on again. So, you know, Shaq was one of those, wasn't he? And I suppose...
Minamino, probably.
Minamino's one as well. And you know, I come back to what Klopp's saying about, you know, how do you improve on this team? And there's two ways, isn't there? Is what we're saying here about Cade Gordon. Yeah, brilliant. I don't want to be blocking development of those players. Or there's big impact. You get someone better than what you've got. I think that's beyond us. I think that's beyond us to do that. I don't think that's possible, unfortunately.
Yeah. So let's look at some positives. I thought today Virgil was Virgil, wasn't he? He was imperious. Yeah. Yeah. And Joel Matip was not far behind. I thought the two of them, the way they handled Lukaku, I thought it was outstanding.
Comfortable, I'd say, Dave. Comfortable. Yeah. I think they just look like what they are. A very high quality, experienced senior pros. And I thought Lukaku, if Lukaku's the final piece of the jigsaw for them, I thought he wasn't a difference maker today. I thought he was largely what I've seen from him before in our league. I don't think there was any surprises. I think he played as I expected him to play. He's not a bad player, he's a really good player. And I think you said maybe in the midweek pod, Dave, that he's a flat track bully and that's not necessarily a bad thing. But yeah, what he has got is that he's got that pace, he's got that physique, that strength. But I thought both of them handled him quite comfortably, to be honest. And they handled him they were quite happy to hand him off to each other. You know, it wasn't like, I mean, I think he tried to peel up, he tried to play onto Joel quite a bit to start with. Joel handled him well. Then he had to go the other way occasionally. And there were kind of like also quite a few moments where it was one up, one back. So sometimes Joel would push further forward, Virgil stay back and vice versa. And so on each of those occasions, occasionally Lukaku pulled onto the player who was staying back and each of them handled him well. The physical threat wasn't really an issue. The pace wasn't really an issue. The word comfortable was in my mind really in terms of how we handle Lukaku, and that's just testament to the quality of that pair.
Yeah, I agree with that flat track bully stuff that Dave was saying. And I think that is a good thing for Chelsea. That's what Chelsea need, is someone who's just going to... He will smash 20 goals this year. I just don't think many of those goals will be against teams in the top 4, 5, because I just think he lacks that little bit of extra subtlety and quality. You know, there's moments today when he's getting the ball stuck under his feet. But, I mean, it's hard to judge him again today because he's up against Virgil van Dijk, probably the best defender in the world. And you're up against Joel Matip, who's one of the most underrated players on the planet. It's just an incredible centre-back that never really gets the credit he deserves. But it's 10 men, so, you know, he is isolated. He doesn't get a lot of support around him, but it did have sort of the lad from the Championship who scores 20 goals and then comes up to the Premier League and goes, oh, this is tricky, and then doesn't score 20 goals the next season. There's this sort of very high-level vibes of that, I thought, today, where it was just, nah, mate, that's not happening today. You might get away with that against, you know, some sort of circus team like Arsenal, but you're not getting away with that today.
What about the atmosphere today, then? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I mentioned about how loud it was. That was fantastic, particularly after the goal. Everyone was right up for it. I think the time and the opposition really helped with that. But the one thing I do want to say about the atmosphere today, Dave, is that I just was really disappointed by the Rent Boys chant. And a bit pissed off with it, to be honest, because I felt that it was deliberate. From a section of the support, I thought it was almost belligerent. It was almost like, no, we're not homophobic. We're not. This is not about being gay. This is about whatever it's about. But it's an anti-Chelsea chant, and we're going to sing it anyway. And I think probably most fans who are saying that and thinking that, I think they're probably right. I don't think they do intend it to be homophobic, but that's irrelevant. They're completely missing the point. It's just a massive slap in the face to our gay fans, our LGBT+ fans, that, you know, it's hurtful to them. These people are saying, specifically saying, please don't chant this because it is hurtful and upsetting and it doesn't make us feel accepted. It makes us feel unwanted. Why continue to do it when people are saying, our own are saying, please don't? It's just not good enough. And you know, the thing that really gets to me now, I mean, I say this to the kids at school in assemblies now and again, and we occasionally have an assembly on just on acceptance and how we deal with each other. And I always ask the question, put your hand up if you've got a friend or a family member or you know someone who's LGBT+. And the whole room puts the hand up. So we've all got friends and we've all got family who are gay or bi or trans or lesbian or whatever, non-binary, whatever. You know, there's a lot of people who identify differently to the previously accepted norm. And I think a lot of those people are made to feel different too much of the time and don't feel accepted. And the little things that we can do is listen to them when they're saying, please don't make that chant. And yet today, thousands of people wanted to carry on doing it. Why? That's not us. I don't think that's us. And I don't think some of those fans are not listening. They're just thinking, no, I'm not a homophobe. I'm just saying because I hate Chelsea. Well, it's irrelevant what you think. Your own are telling you to stop doing it because it's hurtful. So stop doing it. Why would you continue? Why would you continue when you're being told not to do it? I feel quite angry about it, to be honest. And I just think it's... it doesn't reflect well on us at all.
What surprised me, Paul, was I wasn't expecting it. I thought, you know, there may well be a small minority doing it. What surprised me was like was how many were chanting it. That really took me aback because I know what you've said about, like, you know, people have said don't do it, it's offensive to us and all that. There's going to be people who are just not bothered by that. Like it or not, there'll be people who'll be like, you know, I don't care what you think, I'm going to sing it. But there's no way that these people are not aware that it's not acceptable, because Jurgen Klopp has come out and said, please don't do this. Yeah. So it's also a slap in Klopp's face when he said, look, don't do this. This is not acceptable. We don't want to hear it. Just bury this chant in the past where it belongs. So there's no way anyone can say that, I didn't know, I'm not aware of it, because everyone's on social media now, and this was everywhere because Jurgen Klopp actually came out and said it. So that is going to get more publicity than just a spokesman for whatever minority group who says something. People are not bothered by that. They're not even going to see it after time. But when the manager of the football club is saying it, that's headline news. That's everywhere. So everybody is aware of the situation and that this chant is not acceptable and it needs to stop. And yet thousands just did it anyway. And as you say, it felt like it was a deliberate act of defiance. Like, don't tell us what we can and can't sing. We'll do what we like. And I felt like it was disappointing. The only encouraging aspect was there were a lot of people booing it and trying to shout it down. But it wasn't once, it was twice. It happened again, like, not long after that. And I was sat there thinking, what are these people thinking? Just pack it in, you know. Like, I sort of expect it to a point from, like, young lads in the away following, and, you know, like, they're a little bit overexcited, they've had a drink and that. You kind of expect that that's going to happen, and you hope that the rest of the fans will just have a word and shout it down, and it won't really take off. What I didn't expect is for it to be happening on the cop, and, yeah, it was extremely just disappointing and disheartening. Yeah, and I was surprised, I've got to be honest. It did surprise me that it happened.
Could you hear it on the telly, Stu?
Yeah, I could hear it on the telly. It's just, it's disappointing. I think it's one of those things as well, though, where there's lads who'll be singing that, and they would never dare sing racial slurs. And there's still far too acceptable. I find it with, like, coaching at amateur level. There's still, homophobia is still far too common. Far too common from people who they absolutely know that there's a red line now on racism, and you cannot get away with that sort of thing. It's still far too much of a soft touch on things like homophobia. Yeah, it's disappointing. It felt like, for me, there's a vibe of, like we've had a little bit in this country the last couple of years, if I'm not being told what I can and can't say, you know, they feel like I used to be able to say whatever I wanted, and now it's really annoying that I can't say whatever I want whenever I want, and so I'm gonna get away with it because I think this is in the grey areas where I can nod and wink and get away with it and pretend that I'm not being homophobic. Yeah, it's not good enough. We can't call ourselves a progressive fan base. You know, we can't sing You'll Never Walk Alone and then just decide that the feelings of a large proportion of our support just don't matter to us. It does matter. It's not acceptable, and it needs to be driven out.
Definitely.
Right, so to wrap things up then, do we feel as though today's taught us anything we didn't already know? Have we learnt anything from it about maybe a Chelsea better than we thought? has your confidence in us waned a little bit, or has anything changed?
I'd say for me that my opinion of Chelsea hasn't really changed a lot today. I thought coming into the season, I thought they were a good side. I thought they were a good side last year. I thought their decision to get an actual proper manager in was, you know, that was a bit scary for everyone else. It's going to be worrying if United ever decide to do the same thing. Yeah, I thought they were a good side, and I think they'll be there or thereabouts. They've got two good players in every position, and I thought the first half today showed it was a coin toss on. We were threatening them, they were threatening us. Either team could have won that. And I think, even though I'm saying Lukaku might not make the difference in the big games, I do think those games last year where they didn't get the goals that they needed in those against the minnows or against the mid-table teams, Lukaku probably will help them he'll help them amass more points in those games. So they'll be there or thereabouts. So no, I don't think today taught me that much about either side. I think they're both quite equal. I still think Liverpool have got the edge. They've got more quality in the squad. They've got more experience of winning things in the squad. They've won the league recently. You look at that team that got, you know, 90-odd points a couple of seasons, and you've lost Ronaldo, but you've added Thiago to it. You've added Jota to it. You're looking at Harvey Elliott, that's been added. Curtis has been added. I'm pretty happy with the situation of where we're at. I think City's an interesting one because they don't feel like they've not started on fire. And United, I think it's interesting. Again, I'll probably end up looking stupid, but I think Ronaldo might cause more problems than he solves for them. Again, I'm willing. I'll probably end up looking like I've got egg on my face. But yeah, I just think like a really powerful ego in that dressing room with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer wants to be on every free kick. Doesn't want to do a lot of running. That feels like that could go wrong. So no, that don't think today taught me much about the title race. I think it'll probably be between Liverpool, Chelsea and City, and I think United will be just a touch off it.
Yeah, I think I broadly agree with all of that. I mean, I think today really confirmed what I thought about both sides today. I think Chelsea are serious title contenders, and they're really, really well coached. You know, that second half just shows you how well coached they are. I think we could see that last season anyway, but I think it was just confirmed. I think we all know what Lukaku is and what he isn't, and I think that was confirmed today. I don't think he's a match winner in the toughest of situations. Not consistently anyway. I'm not saying he won't get a goal against a top four rival this season that might even be the winner, but he's not a consistent difference maker at that level. But I do think he is that flat track bully, so that will improve them. I think we look like what we are, which is a really top quality team and a very good squad that's packed full of winners and has got the best manager in the world. And I think a lot of people have forgotten how good we are. And I think, all the players that Stu mentioned, plus I'd throw Tsimikas in there as well, really mean that the squad has moved forward, I think, since the last time, since we won the title. Obviously, we're leaving last season out as that aberration that it was. In terms of the Manx, I can see it going either way with Ronaldo. On one level, you look at him and you think they actually need somebody to come in and put the winner's stamp on that dressing room, a leader, someone to say, I've got all these medals, I've won all of this, and this is how it's done. But I can also see it going the way Stu said, in terms of, you know, the ego and not playing to team orders and just doing what he wants on the pitch. Hard to tell, really. We need to see a little bit more of that. And then City. What are City different? What's different about them? I mean, why have they signed Grealish for £100 million and they haven't got a centre forward? And then they're sort of saying they're going to take Ronaldo, and then they didn't get Ronaldo. And how is Ronaldo a fit for them? Strange. Really strange for a club that supposedly is very strategic in the way it makes transfer signings, regardless of how they're funded. I'm not convinced by their business at all. So I think, yeah, it's the top four in the fight, and I think certainly it's us, Chelsea or City, to win it. And I still think probably us.
Yeah, I agree with all that. As for why City would have wanted Ronaldo, I think relevance. I think it's as simple as that. It's like, no matter what City do, nobody cares. They might be winning trophies, but nobody really cares about them. You know, they're irrelevant, and it really burns them up that Liverpool and Man United get all the publicity anytime like either of those two teams do anything. they get all publicity, and City are like, we don't get that when we win. And it really, it burns them inside that people don't take them seriously. And I think they've looked at Ronaldo and thought, well, if we bring, because it was the same with Messi a year ago, they were going for Messi as well. That didn't come off, but it's all about like relevance. People will be talking about them all around the world, and I think because Ronaldo's a terrible, terrible fit for Man City, and Guardiola, it's not a coincidence that he started talking about taking a job as a national team manager when they were getting linked with Ronaldo. I mean, he's obviously Team Messi all the way anyway. It just seemed a really strange one. But I also think United signing him was strange. I feel like United did it because they were just panicking that he was going to go to City. And like the, you know, the fans were going to be so upset and like, oh, you know, let's see if we can get him, because I agree with you, Paul, that it could go both ways. I'd lean towards it not going well, but even if it goes well, the way I look at it is, say Ronaldo scores 30 goals this season, which is more than conceivable that he could do it. That's not adding 30 goals to what United were going to do anyway. It's just taking goals away from other members of the squad. Probably Bruno Fernandes, who's not going to be on free kicks and penalties anymore. That's going to wind him up. Pogba's not going to be getting penalties either. So I think you're looking at the dynamic there. It might cause them some problems. And another thing, which nobody's really seemed to have touched on, you bring in an extra forward into what they've already got. That's just taking minutes away from Mason Greenwood, who's absolutely a phenomenal talent. Yeah, I don't like saying it, but he's brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant. And if he was in our squad, he'd be getting a ton of minutes. I'm not saying he'd be starting all the time, but we'd be thinking, you know, bring this lad through. He's like Harvey Elliott level, but he's a forward. But at United now, they've got so many options. I'm not saying he's not going to play. But his minutes are bound to be impacted by the fact Ronaldo comes in, because Ronaldo's not going to want to be on the bench at any point. He's going to be wanting to play every game, which means it's two plus Ronaldo. And I just think that may well cause some problems with them. But even if it doesn't and he does well, I just feel as though it's just whatever goals Ronaldo gets, it's taking goals away from someone else rather than all of a sudden United are going to have goals coming from everywhere. It's not going to be that, because everything's going to have to go through Ronaldo, because that's, you know, he demands that. So it's not a signing that really concerns me, but there's always the possibility, as Stu said, that we're going to end up looking really stupid if he scores 40 goals and they end up winning the title or something. But no, I'm more worried about Chelsea and City than I am United. But I do think that those four are like so far ahead of everybody else. Whoever comes fifth is not going to be anywhere near fourth place. I think there's such a big gap.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, I was going to say, a lot of the Ronaldo chat reminds me a little bit of Ibrahimovic, when everyone was saying, oh, what a great year he had. It's like, yeah, he was scoring goals, nobody else was.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't meaning that United were winning more football matches. It just meant that he was scoring a lot of goals, because everything, a lot of their play then ended up revolving around him. And he was the focal point of everything. It was like, oh, that's fine. We'll mark him then when we play you. I might be wrong, but I just feel like I watched Portugal, and I feel like Ronaldo's gone a little bit from. It's just as he's getting older, it is very much more people are going to have to do my work for me, and I'm not sure is that really the best thing for your team now. As you're trying to build a new, you're trying to build a style of play. You're going to have Ronaldo in there, and everything's going to have to rotate around him. I don't know. And also, you know, you can't go on any tours to the US anymore. It just complicates things, doesn't it?
Certainly does. Right, so I'm still tipping us for the title. I think, Paul, you are.
Yeah.
Stu?
Yeah, go on, why not?
Clean sweep. Yeah, I think that's a good way to end it anyway. So that's it for this week. There's no game next weekend, but we'll probably still come back with a podcast anyway. So look out for that one. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Well, the best word I can say, but we'll describe this, was boom. Ooh, what was this? It was really good.